Hi, I'm Dr. Demento, and you are listening to KBOO Portland.
Cable Community Radio's annual meeting and board election will be held on Saturday, September 20th at 11:30 a.m. at Mississippi Studios in North Portland. At the annual meeting, members will have the opportunity to meet candidates running in the board election. Final votes will be cast and counted. The results of the elections will be announced at the end of the meeting. Online boarding is open now through the annual meeting at cable.fm/board25. Paper ballots will be sent to members by mail. Again, that's Cable's annual meeting and board election on Saturday, September 20th at 11:30 a.m. at Mississippi Studios, located at 3939 North Mississippi Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at cable.fm/board25. Cable Community Radio's annual meeting and board election will be held on Saturday, September 20th at 11:30 a.m. at Mississippi Studios in North Portland. At the annual meeting, members will have the opportunity to meet candidates running in the board election. Final votes will be cast and counted. The results of the elections will be announced at the end of the meeting. Online boarding is open now through the annual meeting at cable.fm/board25. Paper ballots will be sent to members by mail. Again, that's Cable's annual meeting and board election on Saturday, September 20th at 11:30 a.m. at Mississippi Studios, located at 3939 North Mississippi Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at cable.fm/board25.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. Still looking back 20 years ago, what happened with Hurricane Katrina, and more importantly, the aftermath, especially as it pertains to the city of New Orleans. One of the key people who was on the ground doing a tremendous amount of organizing with his organization, Common Ground, is veteran Black Panther Malik Raheem. Malik, there's so many questions I want to ask you, you know, first looking back about the relief efforts that you did. I think those are somewhat overshadowed because of some of the things that you actually witnessed. And we were there when you spoke and gave that searing testimony at the Katrina Tribunal and talked about the vigilante violence that took place at Algiers is something that also shouldn't be overlooked. But I want to talk to you starting off with just what do you remember about the work that you all were doing with the relief efforts? Because what I recall is that as people were fleeing New Orleans, trying to get away from the floods, especially in the Ninth Ward, you had folks that in order to collect insurance, in order to, you know, maybe start rebuilding, would have to go through crazy red tape, including getting their houses dried, which was an impossibility at that time, considering what was going on. But you all were on the ground doing that, and I think that's not talked about as much. But let me start off with just your thoughts looking back 20 years ago.
First, I got to give honor to the Most High God for allowing me to be here this day to talk with you. Second, to the spirit of Emmett Till, because 70 years ago, today, he was murdered. Then to all those who perished. The lower Night Ward had a pre-Katrina population approaching 15,000. Right now, they have a post-Katrina population of less than 5,000.
Wow.
We know that over 1,000 people who perished during Katrina was from the Lower Night Ward. Nowhere in our history in America have we lost so that many people, and we pay no homage to them. Since Katrina, we have had at least 18 Essence festivals. We just had the Super Bowl here, where we had the richest blacks in this country, in this city. And none of them did not. It may be a crime on those that is least fortunate, but it's a sin on those that have wealth and refuse to do anything. Most of the recognition that I've received from the work I've done after Katrina has been outside of this city and state.
Really?
Oh, yes. And far as this, listen, the only interview I've done by local media was yesterday at a brother and sister who have a program on WBOK. Besides them, and you got to remember, the only reason why Common Ground was established was due in great part to Willie and Mary Ratcliffe. They're not here. They're not here. They're in San Francisco. But Mary Ratcliffe
from the Bayview
called me and did an interview with me on the phone. And it was called This Is Criminal.
I remember now.
You dig? Wasn't for that, it wouldn't have been no Common Ground. So I always, in my prayers, remember both Mary and Willie Ratcliffe, who I truly believe is giants in the struggle for environmental peace and justice. And I pray that that before the Most High call them home, that their story be told. So I never got any, back to, I never got any recognition here. I got a Lifetime Achievement Award from President Biden, but not one politician would hand it to me. Not one member of the Democratic Party thought that I was worthy enough to hand me an award given to me by their president. Not one. I've only in the last 20 years had only one politician to come to an event and hand me a proclamation. Just one. I would have lost my mother's home for back taxes because they didn't, you know, I can't get no road home and all this because I'm the wrong one. I couldn't even get a job for the last 20 years. I've only been able to make it because I've been blessed with a woman that stand by me, my other half, my queen. If it wasn't for her for the last 18 years standing by me, I don't know where I'd be. So I would have had to go back to California, which they was trying to do. We running back to California. We blot out what they done, and let's go on. Because what he's saying was a lie. What he's saying about vigilantes roaming the streets of Algiers Points, well, that's not true. What he said about police killing individuals like the murder of Henry Glover.
Yeah.
That's not true. What they said about Gretna coming into New Orleans and turning residents of New Orleans fleeing African-American residents, fleeing the worst disaster at that time in American history, turned them around and forced them to go back to a flooded city. That wasn't true. But now we find out that it was true. But nobody did nothing.
And you know, you spoke, I mean, in very deep detail at that tribunal. You know, we play that from time to time to remind people just how treacherous in these modern times our government can be. Folks are kind of looking around and they're acting a bit surprised about what is currently unfolding. And I always look back and said, well, they did a test run, if anything, in the aftermath of Katrina. You know, vigilante justice, absolutely no help. And we see that played out just recently in places like St. Louis, where they had the tornado that has been, you know, swept under. The demonizing of people who spoke up, like yourself, and, you know, sadly, the erasing of that history. I did not realize in New Orleans they weren't speaking to you or recognizing, considering all the stuff that you were doing with Common Ground. It's baffling. I had no idea, because we always talk about it.
Heavy D, listen, as far as they're concerned here, Common Ground never existed.
Jesus Christ.
Never existed.
I want to stop.
Meg Perry, her debt was the debt of a drifter. That's what our main four news media said. We had politicians that was telling people to leave me alone because the only thing I'm going to do is get them in trouble. You know, so again, we had to endure this. For the last 20 years, like I said, my brother, I've 17 of those years I've lived in a house without water. For 17 years, I never had anyone to come and say, well, hey, Malik, we gonna help you. Now, I have all new plumbing done, but they won't cut my water on. They couldn't make no sacrifice to cut my water on. But they could make sacrifices to pay their family and friends that rode home money. I didn't ask them for any money. I just asked them for just turn my water on. And they refused. I got to dot every I and cross every T. That's for 20 years. I was in California 4 months ago. I received more help in those 4 months in California than I've received in the last 20 years here in New Orleans. And I was only in California a week.
Wow. Malik, I want to bring in Kali Nkuno, who is joining us this afternoon as well. Kali, who did the Hurricane Relief Fund down in New Orleans. So much to unpack with what Brother Malik is talking about. And the thing that is really pertinent is two things. One, looking at the lack of help that folks in New Orleans had. There was no help. And now we're seeing this, and I don't know if people can really wrap their heads around that, you know, defunding of FEMA. We're at a time when we have this environmental crisis where things are only going to get worse. and you've been sounding the alarm over and over and over again to say that people need to be prepared. You looking back at those 20 years, what comes to mind, especially in lieu of what Brother Malik just shared with us, Kali?
Let me first, you know, pleasure to be here and to be with both of y'all brothers. Let me make one correction if I can, Davey. There was no major coordinated help that came from the state, the municipal, or the federal government. Right? They dragged their feet. They lied. We can go on and on about that. But I think, I just wanted to note, I think it's incorrect to say that folks didn't come to help. There were thousands of folks who came from, you know, I would say basically, what, October 2005, well into, I would say, 2008 and beyond. The folks that came to volunteer with Common Ground, with ACORN, with the People's Hurricane Relief Fund. So, the social movement responded.
Right.
And sometimes people came, you know, in the hundreds when calls went out. So, there was a response and things that was coordinated on a social movement level, people to people level. And I think we got to highlight that because if we don't, we wind up missing some of the lessons that the movement needs to draw upon.
Right. Well, I appreciate that. And when I'm saying help, I'm just remembering people on their roofs.
And I'm remembering
very clearly, because I hear those tapes of what people were talking about, people being flooded into jails. And there were folks on the ground, but I remember hearing Rothen, everybody talking about ICE picking up people in the middle of all that. So that's what I mean when I say there was no help.
Yeah. We're saying the same thing, but I just also want to point out that when they talk about quote unquote using their language, the first responders, it was people in the neighborhoods.
Yes,
people's neighbors who were helping each other and getting boats and moving folks out, and they had to sit and watch, you know, FEMA the helicopters and stuff that they had once they got a little bit of motion late, then passing over black folks to go get folks. You know, for days, right? But brothers and sisters, you know, helping each other out. So people in the community were the first responders. And I'm bringing that out because I think that's one of the, like in this current moment, right? Where we see Trump escalating his, you know, takeover, right? City by city or case by case. Folks say, like in California, Gavin Newsom may be, you know, saying some clear things, right? He may be amping up his kind of anti-Trump rhetoric to position himself for a run for presidency. But there's plenty of things that he could do and could have done in L.A. to make more of an intervention against the federal troops coming into town and commandeering that situation. But are they going to do that, right? And if there's this notion that we need to kind of wait or appeal to the Democrats or some element of government to come save us. And the key lesson I've been trying to articulate with you and everywhere else, don't anticipate them helping at all. We have to help each other. That is the fundamental basis.
Real talk. What do you remember most looking back at 20 years that has kind of gone on notice? And maybe you can even share some of the stuff that you all were doing that just kind of has been erased.
One thing I want to bring up just in the here and now is the nature of the military occupation that happened here in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. Because there's some lessons that need to be drawn for folks to understand what is taking place in D.C., what is still ongoing in L.A., and to get prepared for what he's planning on doing, him and the MAGA movement are planning on doing by going to Chicago and going to New York, and that people need to go back and study what happened here under their military occupation, how they fabricated stories that Brother Malik was talking about, how they created these stories about people shooting at helicopters or shooting at the relief buses, and how they used that to repress people, how they used that to herd people up and then scatter them to the winds and not provide any resources or aid to get people back home, right? And here we are 20 years later, and this is a damn near a new city, right? On account of that forced dispersal. And people need to remember, people were herded on buses, families separated, not told where they were going to go, and just, you know, shipped to Baton Rouge, to Jackson, to Houston, to Dallas, putting on airplanes, and then scattered and given one-way tickets out of here with no answer as to when I might get home, if I am going to be allowed to come home. And I say that part because I want people to remember some of the key work that I was involved in after Hurricane Katrina had to do with saving public housing. So working with, you know, Brother Malcolm Suber, Leon Waters, and Daisha Jukali, Althea Francois, make sure you know, rest in peace, Viola Plummer, you know, just invoking these names so people know and remember, understand the history. And we were involved in a serious struggle to try to preserve the public housing. And most of the public housing, you know, like the St. Bernard, and it was perfectly fine. It just needed to be cleaned out. But they boarded it up, they gated it up, and would not allow people to come back, and then gave an order, basically in 2007, gave an order that for those to be reopened, they had to be demolished and redeveloped, and they came up with an exclusive policy on who could come back and who was going to be forbidden from being allowed to return. But they destroyed something that was perfectly usable and could have served people almost immediately. Them houses could have been cleaned out in a matter of weeks. And I'm not saying something speculative, you know, work with we did clean out operations, help with Common Ground, who did I would say the lion's share of that, as well as Acorn down in the lower Ninth Ward. We knew how to do that. You know, I would say by the mid 2006, folks can come in and clear out and gut out, do all that stuff, and have it ready for folks to redevelop, remove, you know, in a heartbeat. And that was not something that we needed the federal government or somebody to come in and approve and demonstrate. They just would not release the either the resources, but more importantly, wouldn't give their authority, their permission to allow folks to come back. So this was an ethnic cleansing by design. That's the piece I want folks to remember most clearly about what took place 20 years ago, and it's an ongoing program.
And even when people had resources and were like, I'll buy these projects if I can, it's like, no, we're not trying to sell it to you either. You know, and so those are things that need to be underscored. That was the voice of Kali Nkuno as we're looking back 20 years ago, the Hurricane Katrina and the aftermath. Brother Malik Rahim, I want to come back and have you tell people some of the stuff that you were doing with Common Ground. So people understand, I think Kali alluded to some of it with the cleaning of the houses, and I kind of set the stage a little bit by, from what I remember, where, you know, people had to get those things cleaned, otherwise you couldn't, you know, have the next set of things put into place. And, you know, just in my own background, my wife in Texas had her house flooded, and I remember they gave you like 3 days to get it all out and to remove mold, otherwise you don't get insurance and all that. So unless you have people, that, you know, things ain't gonna happen. And then they had these predators that came around, you know, like, hey, we can clean your house for, you know, I don't know, $20,000, and you know, and you're trying to get your insurance, you don't get that. Next thing you know, you lose your house. So we've seen that type of stuff, disaster capitalism or whatever. But can you explain to people what you all were doing? Because in many ways, you were really trying to save people's, you know, homes that they owned. That was the Lord's work, if anything.
Well, I'm going to tell you, we served over the 3 years before I was kicked out of common ground. We have served over 500,000 people, providing a variety of services, from tarping roofs to health care, health clinics, legal clinics, environmental remediation, wetland restoration. Besides the amount of food and water distribution centers that we set up, we served 19 parishes in this lousy state. We served two counties in Mississippi and one in Alabama, and just about everywhere that we was displaced to, we sent volunteers to meet with them to see if they want to come back. These were some of the things that we did. Because of this, the International Coalition of Sites of Conscience designated my house, my mother's home, as being a site of conscience. There's only three sites of conscience in Louisiana, and they are McDonald 19, the Whitney Plantation, and what they say, Malik House. Mm. It's been recognized in 65 nations, but it's not recognized here in this lousy state. You know, you could easily say that these was racist. It was Republicans that was doing this, but no, it was Democrats, and it was Black Democrats that decided that what we was doing on the grassroots level wasn't worthy of their respect. Wasn't worth it. Just maybe if we'd have stood up after Katrina, maybe it wouldn't have been a Ferguson or a Jenner or any of those others if they seen that we truly cared about the least fortunate among us. But we'd rather play basketball. We'd rather sing a hip-hop song. If we rather do anything other than rolling up our sleeve and help the least fortunate to recover. I mean, listen, you have people that did that, the little that they had, they lost during Katrina. They was already broke. Because when Katrina happened, it happened the worst time in America to be broke. That's right after school opened. The poor is doing nothing but trying to hold on until the first of the month. And then they lost everything. Everything. When the flood happened, we seen people that had to leave with no shoes. Because you ain't got time to look for no shoes when your house is flooded. And you have to get your kids out. You dig? But we didn't care. Because no one cannot tell me that this, that would happen after Katrina, was no accident. It wasn't providing services to the poor because the poor was no longer tolerated in the city. And they believe this is the jewel of this lousy state. And now here come Katrina. Let's get them out of here. You dig? We'll tolerate those who are singing, dancing, and play basketball and football for us. But those poor in the project, they got to go. Like what he said about that, they was giving families in the project 1 hour.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
1 hour that to get out. And as fast as they got out, they put steel plates on the doors and windows to make sure they didn't come back. Oh yeah, over here the project, but listen, we didn't even flood on the West Bank. The project has withstood every hurricane since Bessie. But when they said that, hey, we're gonna get rid of it and tear it down and rebuild, oh no, the greed came. All of a sudden, I ain't worried about that. I ain't worried about the 1,000 families that we gonna remove to rebuild houses for 200. Just let me get part of the contract. And if I could get a part of that contract, I don't care what you do with them, boss. You dig? I don't care where they go. Maybe California, maybe one of them other states is best for them. Dig? But what about here? No, I mean, listen. We're in the position everybody talk about what Trump did. What did Obama do? He came here. What did he do? He didn't do anything.
He destroyed the projects.
No, I mean, what did he do? You think, I mean, but we give him all the honor and the glory. See? At least one thing I got to, because I'm going to tell you, one thing I tell anyone, I got more respect for Trump than I have for any of the previous presidents in my lifetime. Because at least he'll support those who support him. But here, among us, we don't have no support. Why you think individuals don't vote? Look at Baton Rouge, with a black mayor and a black police chief. Look how their police force was brutalizing and embarrassing young black men. Will make them take off their clothes, strip them, looking for drugs, and then let them go. That's all you have to do is just read about the Brave Cave. That's what they called it. But nobody cared because it was done in that poor community. So
what was the Brave Cave?
The Brave Cave was a place that you had black police would bring young blacks, men and women, strip them of their clothes, beat them, sometimes make them confess to having drugs. Sometimes they just let them go after they beat them. And you think they're going to want to vote? This is done with a black administration in Baton Rouge. Nobody cared. You know, I mean, look what's happened here. I'll tell you this. I bet you if Katrina would have destroyed Gretna the way it destroyed New Orleans, and Ray Nagin wouldn't allow white spleen the flood in Gretna to find safety in New Orleans, right now he'd be hung. Well, what about the other way? And then it's just not upon Ray Nagin, because everybody's easy to throw the blame on one person. It's our educated, our rich class of African Americans.
You're listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM.
Goodbye. KBOO Community Radio's annual meeting and board election will take place on Saturday, September 20th at 11:30 a.m. at Mississippi Studios in North Portland. The meeting will include a state of the station presented by KBOO's Board of Directors and an opportunity for members to meet the candidates running in the board election. KBOO will introduce its 2026 to 2027 operating plan and will present its first Diane Carl Mentorship Award. New directors will be announced at the meeting, followed by a musical performance by Mr. Vail's math class. Again, KBOO Community Radio's annual meeting and board election will be held on Saturday, September 20th at 11:30 a.m. at Mississippi Studios, located at 3939 North Mississippi Avenue.